Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I am Tom, and I am without John again, because as we discussed in our last episode, John's spending some family time on his days off. So I'm doing all the scheduling, and I get to control everything. Which means I got to be self-serving and have my good buddy Wyatt on. What's up, Wyatt?
Hey, what's going on?
You're coming through pretty clear. Sometimes when I get people on Skype, it's a little dog shitty, but you sound great. So let's hope that continues for the whole episode.
Well, as you say, I'm one of those communications nerds, so of course I'm going to have good internet.
And good gear.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, little background and full disclosure. This episode, I'm going to try and keep it as impartial as possible and free of inside jokes. But I have known you since literally you were in high school. I'm what, 9 years older, 8 years older than you?
Something like that.
I'm pretty sure I am the same. You're the same distance below me as my older brother is above me. So I'm pretty sure that's how I did the math.
Yeah, I think so.
But I became a cop and I became an Explorer Post advisor. And one of my little shithead explorers was a guy by the name of Wyatt, who I became quite fond of and helped mentor through the academy. And then lo and behold, you came to work for the same department as me.
Yep.
So why don't you tell our audience kind of about like how things, because now, and we'll get into it, we don't even know who you work for. You're technically in the Air Force, but you work for the Space Force, which, ladies and gentlemen, War Story is bringing you someone from the Space Force. That's right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Just start with how you got involved in Explorers and on up.
So, yeah, like you said, I was a little shithead. Made a lot of wrong choices. And then all of a sudden I hit 18 and I was like, oh fuck, I got to figure some shit out. Got kicked out of high school, went to continuation school, and decided I was going to follow in some family footsteps.
It was you and a bunch of pregnant teenage girls.
Yeah. I swear none of them were mine though. And decided just kind of walk into the police station one day and see about becoming an explorer. So I heard about it and, long story short, got in the program with you as an advisor. I was in there about a year, decided I was going to go to the academy as, I guess now not a shithead and 19 years old.
Well, still a shithead, just a different, a
different breed.
Yeah, mature.
Yeah. I remember getting yelled at because I still had my tongue ring in when I was going on a ride along one time.
Yeah,
what
I remember that.
Fuck? Yeah. Hey, fuck it.
Part of it was just the fact that you were a guy with a tongue ring, and the other part was that you fucking wore it on a ride-along like an ass.
Yeah.
So for you young people out there listening and thinking that you can go on a ride-along with like your nose pierced or your tongue ring in or your eyebrow pierced, maybe think better of that. It just save yourself the headache.
It wasn't visible.
So you get out of the police academy and you came to work for us because you were only you could carry a gun if you got hired, but you couldn't buy one.
Correct. Yeah. So 3 weeks after my 20th birthday, I got hired. And everybody's like, yeah, look at that shithead. I keep using that term now. I like it.
Yeah.
But or yeah.
Shithid.
Yeah, exactly. You got to church it up a little bit.
You are a shithid.
So, yeah, I could carry a gun, but I couldn't buy one. I could go into a bar on duty, but not off duty.
You started out as a reserve.
I did, yeah. So a full-time reserve. So it was like, my badge said reserve, but it was pretty much about it. I was reserved for 3 months,
right,
and then went full-time.
It was kind of their way of, I guess, trying you out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. I was redshirting,
and then right,
I finally made the starting lineup.
Well, I mean, fourth string.
Well, yeah, whatever. That's where they put the fourth string on the nights. So
yeah, and then you spent a bunch of years in law enforcement, made the transition into the military, and went into the Army.
Yep.
And then after the Army, somehow you end up in the Air Force.
Yeah. So I went Army and on Army Guard, and then I was full time guard. So, so it's active guard reserve, AGR. It's the guard's real weird. People are like, what in the hell is going on? Anyways, I'm guard, but I'm active duty status. So it's, you know, active duty benefits. Same everything. Paycheck says active duty. And then I was, I fell in love with Colorado, and that's where pretty much everything's at for my job, and decided to move. Got hired here.
And, for the record, when you got into your first unit, when you got into the Air Force, you gave me a patch, like a unit patch. You know, it was just, hey, here's my unit. I'm going to give you a unit patch. And I'm like, cool. What does it say? What does it mean? You're like, I can't tell you. But I do remember when you called me and you said, hey, so is it okay if a federal background investigator comes to your house and asks you a bunch of questions about me? I'm like, what are you doing? And you're saying, I need some higher clearance for my new job. So just say nice stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And then as much of a pain in the ass as it is, I've been doing it now for like 4 years.
Right. And you told me what I can say, but I'll let you say it. What is it you do?
So what I just say to tell everybody is I do SATCOM, satellite communications.
And that's as specific as you can get.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. And we're not actually really here to talk about your time in the Space Force, because it would be a very boring and detailless conversation.
Yeah, I can tell you like, hey, I just got back from deployment a year ago. Oh, where were you? I can't tell you that.
Yeah.
But where were you near? Well, I also can't tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, literally says undisclosed location where I go. So.
Right. So, I thought we would talk about your time with the police department, because I think there's a couple of people that are on record as having the most heinous shit happen to them in their first couple of years. And I think you're up there in the top few. You know, I always tell people, I'm like, man, this poor bastard, you did CPR on a 3-year-old, a 3-month-old, and a 3-day-old in the first 6 months on the job at 20 years old.
Yeah.
And we laughed, but that was like, we were all your training officers, and we kind of looked at each other like, holy shit, this is insane.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's like we laugh about it, and people are like, wow, you're fucked up. but yeah, I mean, yeah, like for a while there, it was like every single thing that like you could have happened. It was like day after day, oh, I'm getting this fucked up call, I'm getting that fucked up call.
Right.
You know,
it never
really stopped either until I left.
And the story I wanted to talk about, if you're up to it, is the, I was working narcotics, and I was at a conference, and I get a phone call at, I'm in somebody's hotel room. It's 11:30 at night or something like that. Right. And, my cell phone rings and it's you, and I knew you were working. So I picked it up, and, you told me that you had just been in an OIS. You'd just been in a shooting, and I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm going to get somebody sober to drive me back the 8-hour drive from here to there. And you're like, no, 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 it's cool. I'll see when you get back. So I thought we'd talk about that story if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. I think it's what we're on here to hear.
Yeah. So the floor is your, now that everybody knows your background, the floor is yours. Go ahead. What's your story?
Yeah. So I'll save all the details at the beginning because it's very specific. Anyways, we had a bad dude. Unfortunately, he's one of those that turned bad, right? He was actually a former cop in Orange County, California. And
was he
years
a sheriff's
prior,
deputy or was he a city cop?
He was a city cop. I won't say the city on here. I guess I don't want to, even though I know now that people didn't like him, but I'm not going to smear that city.
Right.
Because they've been really cool to me. They were always really cool to me.
And there's no reason to drag them through the mud.
No, absolutely not. Everybody from there just reached out afterwards, and they were really awesome. But anyways, so this guy had been, he was on their SWAT team, trained as a sniper. He was on their narcotics task force. He knew tactics, he knew weapons, he knew all this stuff. So fast forward a number of years, he had went completely the opposite way. Now he had spent two terms. Was that
he'd gotten fired for domestic issues, right? He had
domestic
a
issues,
and
substance issues, yeah.
Yeah. He had a drinking problem, and he'd gotten into some physical altercations with his lady. And
and that's what leads to where he's at right now. Anyway, so he'd done two stints in prison at this point. So, three strikes, you're out. Here in California, it was he was going away forever based on what he did. So he was facing charges for domestic violence, false imprisonment, criminal threats, felon in possession of weapon.
Right. So let's go all the way back to where he left the Orange County area. Mm-hmm. Right. And he'd already done his two terms in prison when he moved to our area. Right.
Yep.
How long had he been off the department? Do you remember?
Oh, I think he got fired in like 90, 91, something like that. Pretty early on, I think.
And,
yeah.
And this is 2006.
Six.
I was going to say six or seven. Yeah. And so he had moved up to our neck of the woods several years prior, right?
Yeah. I don't know exactly when. I know that one of our other partners had numerous run-ins with him at another agency that he worked for along the coast more. So yeah, he'd been there for a number of years and was, was known to be violent with cops and, aggressive all around. Plus, he still had a grasp on the law. So
yeah, he knew weapons and tactics. He knew police procedure. He knew the law. And he knew how far he could push it, and he liked to push it as far as he could.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So this guy now, was living in where we worked and
in the South End.
Yeah. 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 Like the worst apartment complex there was. Well,
we always talk about
this
on the show. Doesn't matter what race, what city, what demographic, it's always the South End.
Oh, absolutely. Where I live now, the South End, super bad. It doesn't matter.
So he now start with, because the call didn't originate with you, right?
No, it was another officer during the day and responded to a domestic violence incident. That's where he got to this apartment and, discovered this female was in there. She reported that she'd been struck. She had injuries. And there's also like a bunch of holes in the wall, a bunch of, you know, crap done. He had taken off. And that's when she'd left too. I guess she came back, and then final straw was there was a note stabbed into the wall with a butcher knife. I don't remember the contents of the note exactly, but you know, along the lines of like, I'm going to kill you.
Right. It was very specific without like there was a no shit note. It would scare the piss out of anybody, especially this gal.
Oh yeah. Not to mention this guy here is like 6'4" and then 260. You know, that prison build too. I mean, he's
right.
He's a big dude and mean as all hell. So that was when she decided to call. So they take the report. They also discovered during this that for some reason, she had a Remington 700 hunting rifle in .308.
Oh, gee, for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe because he was a felon and he couldn't buy it for himself.
Well, this was actually so he was actually cheating on his wife with her, and she had gotten a divorce, and that rifle had been a present from her ex-husband when they were married. So she had it in there. Real weird situation, right? Pictures prove that he was more of a fan of semi-auto rifles.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then he had taken off. So they put out A36.
And now A36 for the audience who don't live in California.
Yeah. So it's like what you hear on the shows, you know, an APB, a BOL. This is the authority to arrest based on
all points bulletin. So. Be on the lookout. Suspect is armed and dangerous.
Yeah.
It's basically like if you have enough to arrest somebody for a felony and you haven't filed a case yet, you can fill out under 836, section 836 of the Penal Code, and basically put out the broadcast to everybody saying, I have the statement of probable cause for the felony arrest. So if you find him, just hook him up. I'll take care of the rest. Just hook him up for me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this has gone out. Obviously, you know, we were all warned. He was pretty bad. So we get that information as we get on our shift. I'm working graveyards at that point. So I get on at 7. So keep in mind, at 7, it's already dark because we're in November now. So, you got Christmas lights up. People are in the spirit. It's cold, dark early. So get this. We decide we're going to just keep a lookout, you know, keep doing some stuff, our daily stuff, but be on the lookout for this guy. So handle some more calls. And then I get a call of, a citizen assist back at the station. I go there, I call, it's this, the victim now saying, hey, one of my neighbors just called me. He's back at the house. And I'm like, you didn't want to tell the dispatcher that shit?
Wasn't he keeping her prisoner at one point? And then he left, but he told her, if you leave, I'll kill you. And then she finally screwed up enough courage to leave, even though he said, if you leave, I'll kill you. So now when he came back, she was afraid he was literally going to make good on the threat, right?
Yeah. So this was way earlier in the day. I think it was like previous night. He had kept her against her will and stuff. So, and then she left. She'd taken off. She'd gone somewhere safe. So now she calls and goes, yeah, my neighbor just called me and says that he's back at the apartment. I'm like, oh shit. Okay. So I get ready to key my mic and go, hey, somebody, if you're near there, watch out. Apparently he's back at the apartment. Just as our watch commander, who's also a shit magnet, gets on the air and goes, he's here. Okay, I guess it's confirmed then. Yep. So I'm like, yeah, I'll call you later. and hang up the phone. And, you know, of course, Paul asked that way. So we get there. We kind of we're hiding off the side because, you know, we don't want him to see us. We know he's got this rifle and we know he's trained with it. So
now how many people, because it's a small agency, so maybe people understand. This isn't like LAPD or some of these other bigger agencies where you've got an armed suspect and you confirm that he's there and you just sit and watch him and wait for the cavalry to arrive, right? We didn't get that option. So how many people are there initially?
So currently on shift are three officers. And that's it. So we get down there. Now all three of us, because we said we're going to assemble there. So we get there. We knew this apartment complex well. It was huge. We were able to like skirt the area and hide. We get there. We decide, you know, we come up with a plan. I come up with a plan because I'm bullheaded. And go like, I'm going to save the day. Let's do this. My call. I'll handle it.
Right.
And everybody's like, sounds good to me. You know.
Well, and admittedly, it was your call. And let's put the cards on the table. If it doesn't matter what your age is, if they gave you a badge and they let you off training, if you're assigned the call, they expect you to have a plan. And if you don't, they'll take it over and that shit will follow you around.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, and I'd already been in the job now almost 3 years. So right. I was confident. I knew what I was doing.
You could buy a gun now and you could buy a beer.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't have any restrictions. I couldn't rent a car still, but that was good. But yeah, so, you know, I come up with this plan and, you know, it's tactically sound. We call the sheriff's department because there are our buddies for some mutual aid, and four deputies show up. Four awesome deputies too, by the way.
Yeah. We're still friends with most of them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all of them actually. So they show up, you know, I just kind of over the phone, brief them on our plan, send these guys back to a perimeter. So to give everybody a picture, right? So it's a huge apartment complex. It's pods of like 12 apartments as one.
Yeah, it's like a mini city.
You know, yeah.
They had like three different pools.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was huge. I think a couple thousand apartments.
Yeah.
So this apartment that he's in specifically is a second story apartment. So it's elevated, window faces the street. Like there's all options pretty shitty. Plus it's like right in the middle of this pod.
Right. So, and the way these things are situated is there's a staircase that goes up to a landing and there's three landings. So there's an entryway with a staircase and a landing, and then a bunch of windows, and then some more windows, and then an entryway with a staircase and a landing, and then there's some more windows and some more. So it goes on like that for, you know, 12 apartments or whatever. And there was a, you know, bottom left, bottom right, top left, top right door.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So
yeah, perfect description right there. So, you know, we get these deputies on the perimeter on the back, and I'm like, hey, we're going to approach the front. You know, there's no way. There's nowhere we're not going to. So, me being the planner I am, I always had an extra vest in my car. So I threw that in the window and I bonsaied it up to block his car in, took my patrol car up there and scurried out the other side and ran like hell.
Yeah, knowing full well, by the way, that it's a soft vest and a 308 will make mincemeat of it.
Oh, it would make mincemeat of the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to go, yeah, I'm being safe. I'm not being a psychopath.
Right. That vest on your window was about as good as a paper mask against the coronavirus.
Exactly. But, at least he couldn't see me, right?
Right.
Keep in mind, it's pitch black, so it's now 10 o'clock at night. So I haul ass back around the corner where everybody's at across the street, and we're like, okay, let's do this. You know, we got patrol rifles out. I've got my department-issued M16A1 with A2 sights on it, 64 grain soft points. So
because we were the pinnacle of technology and advancement. Oh.
tip of the spear, you know?
We were.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Only the best.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure this thing was in Vietnam, so I wasn't the first one to make use of this thing.
It still smelled like a rice paddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You were lucky you had a charging handle or a forward assist.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I think that was the newest update. That's when they switched from Mattel making them.
Anyway.
Yeah, so we go across, you know, assault. I'm point man. Got buddy behind me, and then our watch commander, you know, ship magnet number two, and sneak our way up in the shadows, and you know, try it. So we try and call the guy, nothing. So to paint the picture, right, you've got that opening, like the breezeway there. So as we approach, we're at the opening, and the staircase is on the other side from me, and his apartment is upper right. So from the corner where I was at, it was perfectly diagonal and second story. So it's pretty good distance for it and really good angle. Not
especially for
me. For
the person who's elevated.
Exactly. Yeah. So I start trying to call, you know, coax him out, become a hostage negotiator. You know, you don't want to do this. I got this whole script in my head, you know, come out. We can hug and sing songs.
Come on, man. You don't want to do this.
Yeah. So try to make phone calls. Nothing goes on. There's no answers and nothing. Find out later that he ripped the phone cord out of the wall. So there's no house phone. Cell phones were off. So there was no making good contact with this guy. So I remember that there had been some case law developed actually from our department.
That was the rumor.
Yeah. Well, I found out it was good. Right. So where they actually threw in that case, they threw pine cones at the door of a hotel room to coerce this wanted suspect outside, and to get them out of the room so they didn't have to make entry. Right. And it stood up.
What rocks?
So, exactly. So in this case, I actually used rocks. I was the youngest and determined that I had the best arm. Mm-hmm. So I was going to be Mr.
And it was
SWAT
your
rocks.
Call.
No, exactly. I was like, oh, I got this. I can do anything. I'm a hero. So
put I get me some, a coach.
Yeah. So I get some good size, you know, little medium sized rocks, you know, like skip, like some good heavy skipping size.
Yeah, it was just above, like, trying to get your girlfriend to come to the window, right?
Exactly. I'm not trying to, you know, coerce him with some kisses. So I peek around the corner, all exposed, alone, unafraid. You know, buddy pops around the side, and, you know, I'm pretty much fucked if anything goes on. But it had to be done. So I throw three rocks up there, and I hit that door dead center each time. I was like, damn. I thought I sucked at baseball. I got lucky.
And then in your mind, you're breathing a sigh of relief that you didn't look totally fucking stupid in front of the sheriff's department and your peers.
Oh, and the 6,000 residents of this apartment complex who were inevitably looking.
Right. With the age of, you know, the very first cell phone cameras and you still had to use a camcorder because not every phone had a video camera on it, but they could take pictures and shit like that too.
Well, they're grainy as fuck, but you're going to make something out of it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, whew, all right. Now, you know, I'm going to get contact with this door, you know, get authoritative contact. Because like hell was I going up that staircase with this freaking asshole with a rifle on the other side of the door. So do that. And I get back in position and I kneel down because, as you said, there's these windows here. So partner is covering the windows over my head, and I'm knelt down around the corner, kind of, you know, trying to slice the pie a little bit while covering this door. There's a lot of silence, probably seconds, but to me felt like the silence lasted like 20 minutes.
Right.
And I distinct sound of hearing that deadbolt unlock, and I'm like, uh-oh, it's gonna happen. the apartment's dark inside. I can see it. And this fucking dude slices the pie, just like I'm doing, out of this door with a Remington 308 with a scope on it. The dust flaps up. The bolt is forward. I can see there's no empty hole in the bottom. The mag is in there. I got every reason to believe, he's ready to do some business. And it's like everything just slowed down, like the best thing I could say is, it's like, there's that movie, Keanu Reeves movie a long time ago, Constantine.
Yeah. I just watched it actually. If you can believe that.
Yeah. Hey, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
So everything just kind of stops
right
in there. So everything slowed down and I start I yell at the guy. I'm like, drop the gun.
Now let me go back. I want to real quick, because I know this part of the story goes pretty fast. The moment you hear the deadbolt open and the SWAT, you've discovered that the SWAT rocks work, right? And you know this fool's coming to the door, and it, it's let's see what's behind. Let's see what you've won. do you pick door number one or door number two? So now door number two is opening, and you have to find out if you got a trash compactor or a brand new car. So when he answers the door, right, or when you hear the deadbolt go, and you're wondering okay, how's this going to go down? What's going to happen? Then once you identify that he has that gun, what goes through your mind? Because it takes forever, and you have this chance to identify that he is armed and it's going down. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario is about to happen. What is your mindset?
So in my mind, I'm going like, no, this is not happening right now. This is not fucking happening. You're always taught, don't shoot anybody. Don't kill anybody. That always goes in your head. I'm not a religious person per se, but that's always been ingrained in me. Thou shalt not kill. So I'm thinking, I'd had some close calls before, but not like this. This felt different. And, as I'm watching this guy, he's got this rifle raised up. I'm yelling. I've got all these things going through my head. I'm examining the rifle. I'm examining everything about it. I'm like, drop the gun. I say that twice. And then I kind of start almost plead with him. I'm like, drop the fucking gun. And at that point, he's still coming up and he winks at me. Like this is on. He's so right-handed.
You could see it clear as day. You could see him wink.
Oh, absolutely. I could see everything about it. I could see that's the glass, front glass, the scope coming around as he winks. Like, clearly closes an eye and opens it. A little smirk on his face. Like, this guy is not, this isn't like a suicide by cop. This motherfucker thinks he's better than me. And at that point right then, it was like a physical shift. Like I could feel it. Like my whole personality, my whole psyche, my brain just went, thou shalt not kill is out the window right now. It was like, do this. And
oh, you're gonna wink at me, motherfucker?
Yo, exactly. Yeah,
we laugh about it now, but we've talked about it back then, and I remember you telling me he winked it, and how it that alone was enough to like turn the tide and flip a switch and be like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can still see it in my head, I can smell the smells, everything about it.
Yeah. And it's funny. We always talk about, you can smell the smells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd already flipped the safety off. I always get ready, right? Safety goes off in a situation like that. And so it was off as soon as I heard that door opening. So there's the winking and You know, he's got a good shooter stance. He's got everything going on. He's bladed. He's got support in this thing. And I'm like, I shoot a lot, and that's how you shoot that thing. He's not just half-ass, you know, pulling this thing up to, you know, so I'll shoot him or, you know, call my bluff. So, like I said, at that point, I flipped. His finger begins to move. Again, he's got trigger discipline, just like I do. So does he. And this became one of those, you know, to me, it was like a showdown moment. Like, now we're both kind of tied. Who's going to be faster? And at that moment, like I said, Constantine, everything stopped.
Right, because there's no way that you can actually physically have this long of a conversation with yourself in the half a second takes for this to go down. But yet, it's so weird how you have this jumble of emotions of, it's about to go down. I can't believe this is happening. No, not today. All right, here we go. And did he just wink at me? And which one of us is faster? Like, all of these thoughts, they don't occur individually in a, like, we're talking about them in a linear fashion, but it's a rush of them all hitting you at once. And you, it's only after the fact that you go, what the fuck was all that?
Yeah. My brain was in like hyperspeed.
Right.
I'm like processing, you know, bits of information as a full memory within microseconds.
And you told me another thing that occurred to you. Tell me about, or tell everybody about, the thought about your body armor and who's behind you.
Oh yeah. So I knew the caliber of this weapon. I knew that, yeah, what I'm wearing is not rated for this. It's not going to stop this at all. Even with the hard plate I have in the front, nothing is going to stop this 308 round from going through me. So I also think about the fact that right behind me, who my partner is a guy who's married, who has a stepchild, who has a biological child, who has, you know, parents living with him, has all this stuff in his life. The guy behind him is married, has young kids. You know, all of these guys, they're going to be seriously missed. You know, I've got a parent. I don't have any kids at this point. I'm not married at this point. I'm like, this is not going to happen. You know, these dudes are not dying right now. So that's when, you know, that helped with that, right? That helped with that, like, flip in my brain. And like I said, everything stops at this point. And I go, okay, this is happening. And it was like, and I remember taking this deep breath in, moving my finger down onto the trigger, seating the trigger, especially in the fatter part of my finger.
Pad.
The pad, you're like the closer to the knuckle, like where I always put it, like, I know it's going right there. I've got a good grip. Concentrate on my front grip on the magwell. I've got a good sight picture now. I'm lining it up. I got small aperture on. I know that. I breathe out. Like, for me, it feels like just slowly just exhale. And then nice, easy squeeze on the trigger. And I remember, like, that the hearing the buffer tube of my AR.
Yeah, that weird zing.
Cycling. Yeah. It was I hear it and I know, and I continue pulling trigger, you know, nice smooth pulls a few more times. And then I didn't know this. Now what I was doing at that point, but then so fire those rounds, I see him go down, and it's like all of a sudden time catches back up. And I realize now that I'm standing completely on the other side of the breezeway, which is like probably 15 feet. I'm standing now. I was on a knee around this corner. Now I'm standing. I'm about 15 feet away, and I had already started walking up the steps to get to this guy's apartment.
Right. So if anybody wonders, this is why I wanted you to bring a lot of that stuff that was going on in your mind simultaneously up, right? Because it's a moment of coming to, right? It's mm-hmm. a moment of, you just said that all these things are going on in your mind and you're focused on the pat of your finger and you're focused on whether or not you flicked the safety off, and you know you did because that's what you do every time, and the dust covers and all this stuff, and who's going to be faster and is the bullet going to pass through you and get your buddy who's got kids, and all these things are going through your mind. But what's not going through your mind is that you stood up and advanced 15 feet on the suspect during all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I made a mental decision apparently to get up, go across this. And I'm going after him now.
Right.
And now that, you know, I see him drop and everything comes clear, I stop for a second. I'm like, okay, I know that I'm not supposed to go up there. I know I shouldn't, but I also know that I shouldn't go up there alone. And I look back and both these guys are still at that corner. And I'm like, shit. And then I start yelling because now this rush gets to me and I'm mad, because in that time I got pissed. It's like, you just tried to fucking kill me. And I'm really mad now.
If yeah. anybody's ever like driven tired and gone an exit on the freeway, you know, you go from exit A to exit B. And when you look at exit B, you don't remember passing exit A.
Mm-hmm.
Because you fell asleep for a half a second, even though you were fully awake and somewhat in control of the car because you didn't crash, but you don't remember it. And then when you come to and you realize it was like micro sleep, that disorientation you feel when you just barely fell asleep for a split second or two while you were driving, that's what it feels like to have reality return to normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. That's totally what it's like. Yeah, so it returns, and all of a sudden, you know, I get my everything going on, like you said, and I'm mad now. So I'm yelling at them, like telling them what I have, and I'm also yelling at this guy. And now I see the bottom of his feet, and I'm mad, because now I'm like, I prepared for this fight, and you can't just lay there now. This isn't fair.
Which is such a bizarre thing to think.
Yeah, I'm like, I want my battle. I'm not done yet. I remember thinking that, going,
yeah, it makes you mad.
Wrong with me?
Yeah. Well, no, it's because you're part of you goes, that's it.
Oh yeah,
because it was such a, like, it didn't feel like it to anybody else but you. But the build up to that moment in your mind, and then it's over, and you go, wait, what just happened?
Yeah, I want to go in a freaking Thunderdome right now. Like,
yeah, it's the adrenaline dump.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So then I come to,
now,
and I'm like,
let me ask you this. Let me ask you this real quick. I thought about this. We would pull our patrol rifles, and you carried a Glock, but I at one point I carried a Beretta and I had a safety, and I've flicked the safety off of my patrol rifle literally hundreds of times, thousands of times. Anytime you deploy it, a 211, hot prowl, depending, you know, on what the neighborhood is and what the information from the RP is, or all these different calls that you might have one officer pull a patrol rifle and take it off of safety. And it occurred to me that when you clicked it off of safety, it's kind of like when you talk about somebody who gets in a car and they don't realize it's the last time they're ever going to get behind the wheel of a car. It's the reverse. It's, I've clicked this safety off 1,000 times and never and not thought today's going to be the day. You think, you know, I'm going to click the safety off just because I got to be sure I'm ready. But that day, when you clicked the safety off, you had no idea that that was the time that you were actually going to need it.
No, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
it's a very weird, disconcerting.
My hands have only done this as target practice.
Right.
This is the last time I'm going to do this is like that.
Yeah.
And now these hands are going to have different memories of flipping that, you know, rolling that safety off. Yeah. Absolutely. It's
the same thing as the sound of the buffer tube going past your ear. That sound is now a different. It's associated with a different feeling. It's not going to target practice at the range.
Mm-mm.
Right.
No. Yeah. It's very much more real.
So now he sustained how many wounds?
So, by the end of it, figured out that so he had been hit 5 times. I was about 25 yards from him, and all 5 shots, all 5 rounds, all impacted his heart directly. So, pretty small target. They assessed that he had expired before he hit the ground.
No, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. It sounds like.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, yeah. In hindsight, I was thinking about this because we haven't really talked about the hindsight because we talked about it when it happened. We've gone back and forth over the years, but this is, I think, the longest we've ever gone without talking about it. And in doing this, I've learned some other kind of questions and thoughts. When you're engaging this guy and you're telling me that this was no suicide by cop, right? You're saying he's going to try and kill me. Now, have you had any thoughts since then of he knew exactly what buttons to push to get you to do what you did, regardless? Like he would have killed you if given a chance, but do you ever think to yourself, he knew that it was him or me, and the wink was like him saying, it's one of us, kid, as opposed to, like, I can beat you?
So, I mean, I've thought about it, you know, all the time, but I still do believe that just based on what I've known about his personality, what people have told me about his personality, backing up a little bit, that rifle was fully loaded, round in the chamber, safety off, and there was the remaining box of ammunition was on the back of the couch, which butted right up to that door. So all signs point to, and what I firmly believe is that he did believe he was going to take me out, and he was going to continue to take people out till he could get away, because he knew, I mean, we all know, you know, and I know, we've talked about this many times, is that cops all think that they can do it if pressed. You know, it's the ultimate test of a police officer. You know, it's, can I defend my life or somebody else's? Would I be, you know, able to use, you know, my firearm? But I think that he knew that, working as a police officer for so long, that he knew that the likelihood of him being actually engaged by a police officer before at least shooting one of them or two of them was very low. So,
well, if he thought, if I see what you're saying, if he thought that his element of brute force and, you know, not talking about it, not threatening, not yelling out the door, just pop the door open and go, you mm-hmm. know, that element of surprise might take the average, especially if he's coming from a bigger agency and it was a SWAT operator, the average patrol cop who might be a little more complacent, he might take him by surprise.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, knowing who was there that night, I think that he was going to get smoked regardless of who was number one in the stack.
Knowing who exactly was all around there. I mean, one of the guys on the perimeter, who's the sheriff deputy, was actually my patrol rifle instructor, right, who himself had been numerous shootings while a member of the Army, and then also as a member of the Sheriff's Department. So he wasn't going to shy away from that confrontation in any way.
And if he'd have been number one in the stack, or if you had switched places with the senior guy on the shift, you know, or any of those stuff, I think there's probably an element of cockiness and narcissism that, I mean, let's face it. If you're a SWAT cop, you're well-trained. You know, and if you're a SWAT cop who gets fired and has a drinking problem and has been to prison twice and you're facing life in prison or going out in a blaze of glory, you're going to push the odds. And
absolutely.
I think I can tell you there are people that were on that department at the time that I think might have ended up getting hurt, getting shot, because they couldn't react. And I think that that's one thing people listening to the show who are working the street, you need to know your partners and need to know what they're capable of. And most of you, I'm sure, are really aware of what, you know, their personality can handle, but not everybody should be number one or number two in the stack.
No. And also on the other side of that is being aware of your partners, right? Everything in police work is about being kind of cocky and macho, you know, no matter male, female, whatever. But for you as a police officer, you need to dig down deep and be real with yourself and know, like, do I possess this or not? And there's nothing wrong with removing yourself from that point man in the stack. You know, you need to think about your partners. Are they going to be able to get home safe at night? You know,
it may be as simple as who's a better shot at that range with a weapons system. You know, I mean, if you're making, let's put it this way. If we're doing a hostage situation, right? And, you know, I was not master, but I was one below, just, you know, a distinguished expert. And there were people that were master, and I'm, you know, I'm good with talking. Obviously I do this podcast. If it was a hostage situation and I was with a guy that was, you know, a master and I'm good at talking, or even if I was with somebody that was the same level as me, but they weren't as good at talking, I would be like, okay, you be the shooter. I'll do the talking, because we need to get this guy distracted enough to, you know, make a precision shot, because it's a hostage. If you have that luxury to, you know, make that plan. And let's face it, if you have the ability to make a plan, you should be talking about it with your partners. But that's a, know your strengths and weaknesses.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, yes, yeah, we've talked about it, right? You know, it's like, I might have no problem talking. I'm pretty good at it. You're on a different level, but I mean, you know that I can shoot. Okay. I guess, you know, so you would be like, hey, I'll go talk. You man the weapon. Be like, yeah, cool. I think that's the right call. Let's do this. You know,
you have to know, you know, it's like when you have a dog, you know the strengths and weaknesses of having the dog and send it where it's needed and use it as the tool it's designed for. People should be the same way. You know, there's a reason why some people go into hostage negotiation. There's a reason why some people go into SWAT. There's a reason why some people go into the school resource officer program.
Yeah. Yeah. If you know that there's something, you know, like you said, using the example of a dog, you can equate it to humans too. If you know your dog is a bloodthirsty psychopath, a preschool is probably not the place for him.
Right.
You know, you're not going to be that warm, cuddly, you know, public affairs guy. You know, go work nights and go kick some ass the way you're designed to.
As we close up, we typically dedicate every episode to a officer, a deputy, firefighter, or a veteran brother or sister that's fallen in the line of duty. And we usually let our guests pick who they'd like to dedicate it to. So is there somebody you would like to dedicate your episode to?
Yeah. So it'd be to, Deputy Kyle Dinkheller of the Lawrence County Sheriff's Department. And that was in, state of Georgia. So, yeah. And this was in 1998. And the reason for this is because there's a specific video, where this deputy was gunned down and a story that goes along with it that I think is very, very important for every single officer to watch and really take note of. And that was probably the biggest influence on me. And I think shaped me and my ability to you know, do what needed to be done.
Yeah, I used to show that video to all of my trainees. And it's upsetting to watch. But the bottom line is we have to learn from every incident. And in Kyle Dinkeller's case, the man came out. He was a Vietnam War veteran. He was screaming at Kyle, shoot me, shoot me, shoot me. Came, was allowed to go back into the car, came out with a, it was an SKS, I believe. And just engaged Deputy Dinkeller. And as you listen to the video, you can hear amid gunfire, Deputy Dinkeller saying, sir, drop the gun, sir, please drop the gun. And, you know, that mindset we talk about and knowing your strengths and knowing your weaknesses and preparing yourself, Deputy Dinkeller, he was still calling a man trying to kill him, sir. And I understand why it happened. I understand how it happened, but, it's a good way to learn that, like you were talking about, when that switch flips and the moment changes, you got to be ready to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, so this episode is dedicated to Deputy Kyle Dinkeller. Rest easy, brother. We got it from here. Do you have any last thoughts that you want to share, or just, since you know me or knew me when, any embarrassing stories you want to talk shit about?
I don't know. Embarrassing stories. Let's see. Right? Man, I don't know.
None that are safe for you to tell on the show.
No, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to tell most of these stories. No, they'll stay between us.
Well, like I said on the last episode, we still have hats available. You can contact us directly. We're going to be doing a giveaway shortly, and just check our social media for the rules. But it's a giveaway for either a red, blue, or multicam hat, your choice. And on our website, we still have the Ranger panties available in certain sizes. We have our OD green t-shirts. We have our regular t-shirts. And I think this winter we're going to do some more of the concealed carry hoodies. So keep your eyes out for that. We do have a limited amount of challenge coins in stock for you guys that want to buy challenge coins, or you could just go on our Patreon account at Podbean, or you can go through our website and sign up for membership. For our forums is a great way to support us. There's also a new way to support us, which we've been working with. And we're also going to try doing this with Amazon, I think, too. But with we had Ed Cardoso of Brothers in Arms CBD. He's a Marine Corps veteran. And him and his business partner decided that they wanted to help. You know, he's talking about how he sounds like a bowl of Rice Krispies every morning when he gets up, just from the punishment that the Marine Corps put his body through and the help that he's gotten from CBD caused him to launch a company that has CBD products for first responders and veterans and well, for anybody really, but he tries to focus on helping people out. So if it's something you want to try, if it's something that works for you, I know some people are hesitant to take it because they still work for an agency or they still work for a fire department or they're still active duty. I get that. But if you're retired or if it's something you think you can, that can help you with anxiety or with inflammation or whatever, go to our website, click the Brothers in Arms link, and just taking it to their site and whatever, make, you know, whatever purchases you make, it'll help us out. Cause they'll be able to track how much traffic is driven to them through us. So we're thinking about doing the same thing with Amazon, where we tried this before. I don't think people quite knew how to do it, or I screwed it up on our website somehow because it was early on in the show, but it'll be a link. You can go to our website, click the Amazon link, and then all the stuff you buy at Amazon, will get, it doesn't cost you a thing. It just, you'll get credit for the, we'll get credit for the purchase. So, those are some ways you can support us. if you don't have anything else to say and no embarrassing stories, then I will, I'll tell our audience, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.